T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Skip the Raider fans. I'm tired of them. They're weighing in on Jimmy Garoppolo. It's funny to me, Tim, that I like, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo. He came in 5-0. He did a really good job. I think that kind of helped boost us to how we were filming next year. You turn around, you had Drew guitar. He did extremely well. You had Adrian Colbert. He did extremely well. And they were kind of like fool's gold. Then you got to look at, I think one of the things that I want to see Kyle Shanahan do really well as well coming in, it seems like the first year he came in with Brian Hoyer, started off a little rocky, started getting better as the year progressed. Jimmy Garoppolo stepped in, did really well. Same thing last year, started off really rough, and then it's like almost a lot of false starts, a lot of little mistakes, and they clean it up as the year goes on. I think if the Niners can start off strong and not so many mistakes, I think we'll have a different feel for the year. I think that's where the fault's lying. I think a lot of it's it takes them almost kind of part of the season, like 5-6 games, to start cleaning up those mistakes, and then all of a sudden Kyle Shanahan's offense starts running really well. And that's my take.
Thanks, Sean. Good take.
49ers are going to have to get off to a good start. And by good start, you got to be 2-2 after four. You got to be 3-4 minimum after seven. You got to just kind of hang in it. And I think, you know, the question marks hit right off the jump in week one at Tampa Bay, because that's a game where the common fan looks and thinks, that's a win.
No, I don't look at it like that.
Cincinnati on the road. Oh, they got a new coach. They're kind of down right now. That's a win. Well, guess what? You struggle in those games, all of a sudden it sets the course for where things can just get awry from you right off the jump.
Well, and what, again, we always forget about the other side. Cincinnati's looking at the 49ers like, that's a game we should win. This team's coming off a 4-12 year. They got an unproven quarterback. They got a lot of new personnel.
The Bucks and the Bengals think,
we got to get those games.
Bucks look good. They have talent, right? The Bucks have talent. They just haven't been able to put it together. Now you have a head coach in Bruce Arians that's proven he can win in this league and get the most out of quarterbacks. I'm looking at Tampa Bay saying, that's a dangerous week one game. You could get blown out down there in the Sunshine State.
Yeah, Bruce Arians, who didn't lose to the 49ers after Jim Harbaugh was gone, right? I mean, right. I think he looks at the 49ers defense as an offensive guru, as something that he can pick apart and shred. And that's going to be one of those games where it's going to be hot. And, you know, it's just week one with a team having months to prepare for that game. That's a much more dangerous game than I think it appears it is on paper. And, oh, by the way, didn't you get smoked there last year?
Yeah, the Reuben Foster day and Marquise Goodwin went back home. That was an ugly
game. So, listen, I understand that Garoppolo is going to be a free agent. Here's my point. I don't care what the situation was in New England with Jimmy Garoppolo. You cannot tell me that if they thought he could be the Patriots quarterback for 8 years at some point that they would trade him. I refuse to believe that. It's so hard to get a quarterback. If they actually think they got a gem behind Tom Brady, they would have found a way to keep him, because those guys are so hard to come by. And if Garoppolo would have had to stay there, or if they would have done something with Bray, I get it. They might have lost him for nothing.
Right.
But here's what I don't think. I mean, if he's not a franchise quarterback, well, then the Patriots made a great move.
Absolutely. Second round pick. They got a second round pick out of that deal. So we'll talk more about Jimmy Garoppolo coming in. Actually, let's squeeze in Jerome real quick before the break. Jerome in Oakland wants to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo before we hit the break here on 95.7 The Game. What's up, Jerome?
How y'all doing today?
We're good.
I wanted to go out here, and I'm not a 49er fan, but I have the utmost respect and confidence in the 49ers and Garoppolo. At the end of the year, Garoppolo will be a top five quarterback. The 49ers will be in Super Bowl contention.
Oh.
And it's all going to be because of Garoppolo's play and the improvement of that outstanding defense. I am a believer, and I am sold that the 49ers are the truth. And time will tell. Just like the Eagles went to the Super Bowl out the blue, watch out for those 49ers. And one more statement. Belichick did not want to trade Garoppolo. That was the beef in New England. He wanted to get rid of Brady. But the owner said keep Brady. And that's it, gentlemen.
Fair enough. I mean, even if Brady's Robert Kraft's guy, there's no way Robert Kraft says we're he's the next Tom Brady. Well, if he's the next Tom Brady, what's he doing on the 49ers? You know what I mean?
Right, right. Hey, 888-957-9570. Jerome believes Garoppolo will be a top five quarterback next season, and the Niners will be in Super Bowl contention. I want to get people's thoughts on that from Jerome in Oakland. We'll do that coming up. But first, let's go to Stephen Langford with the latest on what's happening on 95.7 The Game. What's up, Stephen?
What's going on, Bonte? Good-looking hair today. What's coming up on The Game is brought to you by Canon Mega Tank Printers. Baseball in the Bay stays hot as the Giants completed the four-game sweep of the Rockies. They go 6-1 on the road trip, but they're back home tonight as Madison Bumgarner is on the rubber in the first of three against the Mets. Has winning 10 of the last 12 affected the Giants' plans toward the deadline? Well, Bonte, Steiny, and JD will talk to former Yankee manager, now MLB Network analyst Joe Girardi about that at 12 o'clock. Damon and Darren Smith will also talk to manager Bruce Bochy about the run at 3:30. The Athletics have won 19 of their last 23 and begin their own seven-game road trip in Minnesota to take on the AL Central leading Twins. And NFL Insider Week continues here at 95.7 The Game as Adam Kaplan will join Damon and Darren Smith today at 3. We got a stacked guest list for you today. And a little golf update. John Rahm is now atop the Open Championship leaderboard at 5-under. Coming up, play-by-play extraordinaire Ian Eagle at 11:30. I'm Stephen Langford, and I am out of here!
Out of here!
On the Bay Area's number one sports station, 95.7 The Game.
Let's go!
Now, back to Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Matt Steinmetz, John Dickinson, and for Daryl the Guru Johnson, Bonte Hill, taking you up until 2 p.m. today. Ian Eagle will join us in about 11 minutes. Play-by-play voice of the Brooklyn Nets, also calls football games for the CBS network. We'll talk to him at 11:30 about D'Angelo Russell. What type of player is he? What type of person is he? Did he peak last season as a scout to Rick Bucher of Bleacher Report about a week ago? We'll do that. We'll also take your phone calls here, 888-957-9570. What's the expectations for the 49ers? What's Jimmy Garoppolo going to be like this season? And I want to kick it to JD for a second, Steiny. Because he brought up something during the break that I think is really big and nobody's even looking at. And it's a schedule. It's a schedule early on in the season where if the 49ers don't get off to a good start, you look at the tail end of the schedule, Green Bay at Baltimore, at New Orleans, at home against Atlanta, at home against the Rams, and then you finish the season in Seattle. JD, I want you to tell the audience what you were talking about during the break.
And I don't like to get too far on it because I think once you get to about the midpoint of the season, teams that you thought were good might stink, and teams that you thought might stink are good. But for the early part of the year, especially the first four or five games of the year, there are just games that you better win, right? And I just look at the first two, at Tampa, at Cincinnati, you better be 1-1. Like, you got two games right on the road, and that Tampa game is low-key more difficult than I think a lot of people think it is.
Yep.
If you don't win that game, you better beat Cincinnati. Otherwise, you're coming home, and your home opener is against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who, granted, aren't, you know, this isn't the Steelers that we've known of the last few years. They were a little bit in shambles last year, but you could have a stadium full of Pittsburgh Steelers fans for that opener. That's the one thing you know in your home opener.
That's
in
true.
The sun.
Terrible towels.
At Levi Stadium.
Terrible towels everywhere.
You know, late September. And then you have an early bye.
Yep.
So, I mean, you're immediately at risk if you lose at Tampa. You're immediately at risk of being 0-3. And a,
you always do that.
And a, and no. You are,
and I get it. Like,
you're
I get
up against
it.
Course.
It's true, Steiny.
He's right. He's
and
right.
You got the early bye week,
and it could
and
be
you
a,
come back on Monday Night Football against the Browns.
And that's it. You know, and that to me, early going, you know, that to me would be the all right. The desperation game on Monday night, coming off the bye. The Browns are good, but maybe the you know that might be the game that gets you your first win to get to 1-3. But point being. You got to get one of those first two to put yourself on a level playing field to where that first home game
exactly.
isn't all chips are in with the right. stadium 60% or 50% Steelers fans.
Now that's sad,
and
too.
It's hot, and you got to win, and you're still going up against a team that has some high level pedigree.
I want to get back to the Patriots and Brady and Garoppolo because yes, I understand the. Patriots were not going to pay two quarterbacks. I understand it's Tom Brady's town, and Tom Brady said he wanted to play longer. But I'm going to make an analogy or a comparison here, and you guys tell me if I'm wrong. Joe Montana is every bit the icon in the Bay as Tom Brady is in New England.
Yeah.
The 49ers knew damn well that they had a star in Steve Young.
Yep.
A star in Steve Young. And they made a very tough decision to trade Montana to the Kansas City Chiefs. All I'm saying is, I truly believe that if the Patriots organization thought they had a Steve Young, you owe it to then move on in some way. So, and I'm not saying no way. I'm saying I think they got rid of Garoppolo because they knew he wasn't a Steve Young type. That's all. By Steve Young, I don't mean the way he plays. I mean
star
kind
power.
Of the stature of the quarterback.
You know, he's not a future Hall of Famer. Basically,
exactly.
is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and or maybe
or
even
you
a star.
That he's
maybe
not.
Even a star quarterback.
Or it could be something as simple as Bonte. Maybe Bill Belichick just doesn't believe he can stay healthy for a full season. Maybe he
it's
thinks
possible.
He's good. But, hey, he's good, but I can't pay him, and we still got Brady, and we're going to wait a year. Yep. And then you know what? It might be his team, and he can't play more than 5 or 6 games a year.
Yeah, and another analogy you could use, Steiny, is the Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre situation, where Mike McCarthy basically said, look, Brett Favre, you got 1 foot out the door. I got this young hotshot from Cal. He's been on the bench for 4 years. It's time to move on. And I'm with you here with the Steve Young analogy, where if you knew he was the guy, Jimmy Garoppolo, and – you look at the way Bill Belichick operates, fellas. He gets rid of players a year too early. What about when he traded J.B. Collins mid-season, a linebacker who was having a hell of a season, trades him to the Cleveland Browns and goes, I can replace that guy. Like, he will get rid of guys a year early like Bill Walsh did in his tenure with the 49ers, knowing that he has something special behind him. And did he believe that Jimmy Garoppolo was special enough to say, we really need to get rid of Brady. We can get Garoppolo for cheaper. We can move and build around him. Heck, he not only traded Garoppolo, he traded Jacoby Brissett as well. So I think you're onto something there, Steiny. I really do.
Let's check out Renegade.
Uh-oh.
Renegade's in Long Beach.
He's in the LBC?
Is that what they call it?
That's what they call it, Steiny.
What's
the
C? LBC out here on 2-1 and Lewis.
What's the C?
Long
California.
Beach City. No, Long Beach City.
Oh, it's not Long Beach, California?
No, they call it Long Beach City.
Do they really, Renegade?
Yeah, Long Beach City, the LBC, you know, just okay. out here on Lewis.
Uh-oh.
Not even the third-best quarterback in San Francisco, in California. He's number 4. He's number 5 on the West Coast. The Niners are 8-8. Last I checked, 8-8 ain't going to the Super Bowl. The guy's a decent mid-level quarterback, but that guy almost made me drive off the road, and you know Renegade's blind anyway. But appreciate the time. And 8-8, write it down. Renegade said it.
Woo! I want to go back to Renegade. It's funny. We'll react to Renegade in just a second, but I want to play the sound that Florio dropped on us about Jimmy Garoppolo. He said the heat is on Jimmy G.
Considering the Jimmy Garoppolo's performance last year was a disappointment, they have to be exasperated with the fact that he created that ACL injury by choosing to cut back inside and deliver a blow to a Kansas City defensive player. Now the heat is on him to live up to that contract. And you look at what he's making this year, you look at the average value of the deal, and I think most importantly, you look at the consequences of moving on after this season, if that's what Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch would choose to do.
And Bill, I remember Bill Parcells on Joe Lo and Dibs a couple years ago when the Niners made the move for Jimmy Garoppolo, and it stuck with me. I probably said this every day this week, Steiny. Bill Parcells, the great Big Parcells, Bill Parcells, the Big Tuna, basically said, I worry about Jimmy G staying healthy. And I wonder if he had some intel from Bill Belichick himself. They obviously used to coach together. I know they didn't talk for a long time, but I wonder if he had some intel there from the hoodie in where he thought that Jimmy G would struggle staying healthy.
Since Guru's not here, I'm going to use one of his lines. The best ability is availability. You got to be available.
I thought
right?
You were putting a rat on the table.
Oh, we'll do that. We'll do that in the next 2 days for sure. Absolutely.
I think Florio sums it up pretty well. It's not necessarily that Jimmy Garoppolo can't be good or won't be good. It's that he has to prove it, and the pressure is on, because if it is a disaster, the 49ers have the ability to move on from him at very little cost. And the Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch regime would also be at a point where they would be feeling a little bit of pressure to move on, because instantaneously they're on the hot seat. As this season, if it gets away from the 49ers, and I mean gets away from them under any circumstances, there are zero excuses this year for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch. If this thing starts to get away from them under any circumstances, the pressure is immediately on them to do something to save their jobs.
This is what Bill Parcells had to say on a morning show December 13th of 2017.
If I had a concern, this would be it. Can he stay on the field? He's not a real big guy. He doesn't look like he's a real powerful guy, like some of these Roethlisbergers and guys like that. So durability is such an important trait, and particularly for a quarterback.
That was in 2017.
I'm sorry. That's coming right from Bill Belichick.
You think so?
Yes.
You think they're still talking?
Oh, I don't.
If not, they know each other so well.
Exactly.
He knows what he's thinking. And Parcells knows what Belichick's thinking.
Yeah. Exactly what I'm saying. Did he have some intel there on Jimmy Garoppolo and say, you know what, let's trade him, get a second round pick, because he's just not going to be able to maintain or stay healthy for 16 NFL football games. That's something. That was back in 2017 when Garoppolo was going on that 5-0 tear in the regular season. So hey, that's interesting from the Big Tuna. He knows quarterbacks well. He knows the league well. What we got here on the board here? We got empty names. Go to the phones a little bit later. We got Ian Eagle in a couple minutes here. But
here's the other thing. A lot of people, you know, I asked about the analogy between trading Montana and the Patriots not trading Tom Brady. They say Montana was not as good as Brady is now, at this, you know, et cetera.
Right.
And somebody else said the Niners also had a longer time to evaluate Steve Young. Well, Garoppolo was in the Patriots organization for 3 years.
Yep.
So they had plenty of time to look at him. And all I'm saying is if they truly believed in Garoppolo, I just don't think they would have traded him. If they thought he was going to be their Steve Young, that's all.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with that. I think.
And I get it. There were constraints. I understand there were a lot of constraints.
There were some extenuating circumstances there, I think. But if you give the Patriots credit for the Patriot way and always being, you know, kind of like the Warriors, light years ahead and making sure they're going to make the right moves to set them up, then I think it's worth examining whether or not being willing to give up Garoppolo is a part of that.
Man, it's somebody's head is going to roll if Garoppolo doesn't work out this season. I mean, hey, you go to year four, you got to start all over at the quarterback position. And quarterbacks don't become free agents like they did 20 years ago. Now, everybody's getting franchised. You know, the options are slim. Slim. I can't imagine a situation where, man, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with the 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo. We got to bring in Ian Eagle, play-by-play voice of the Brooklyn Nets, does Nets games on the YES Network, and of course, he calls NFL games on CBS. He joins us courtesy of the Dial Pack guest line here on 95.7 The Game. Matt Steinmetz, John Dickinson, Bonte Hill here on 95.7 The Game, and Ian Eagle, one of the best in the business. And Ian, thanks so much for the time today, for joining us, and we want to talk a little about D'Angelo Russell, who was just traded from the Brooklyn Nets to the Golden State Warriors. Of course, you saw him the last 2 years in Brooklyn, and before we get into the type of player he is, what type of person is D'Angelo Russell like? Because when he did get traded to the Nets, there were questions about his maturity. He was immature with the L.A. Lakers. Did he grow enough in Brooklyn to see, for you to see him as a franchise type of guy, as a star player who deserves a max contract?
Yeah, first of all, great to talk to you guys. Good morning. He went through a transformation that I'm not sure I've seen in my 25 years of calling the NBA, from the persona that he brought from L.A. to Brooklyn and stepping into that locker room. There might have been some skepticism about not just the talent, but was he mature enough to lead a team? And was he at a stage in his career where he could really change the way he's viewed and do it by his actions and do it from a cause and effect standpoint and check all the boxes? He did that. He improved as a player. He bought in to the culture. He took to coaching. He was mature. He was a leader when asked to be. He shouldered a great deal of responsibility in the second year of the 2 years with Brooklyn when they needed it most based on injuries and circumstance. And he was a pleasure to deal with off the court. Anything that the franchise and the organization needed, he was there. He did it in his way and still maintained his whole vibe. So to me, he did everything that you ask for from a player that steps into that situation. He did it in a contract year, and now we see the benefits for both him and the franchise. The franchise changed the way that they were viewed, and I think he has changed his persona, and he got rewarded with a big contract, and he steps into a tremendous situation.
Ian, it is a tremendous situation. The one thing we hear is, will he fit with Steph Curry, and can he play among two other guards with, let's say, Curry and Clay when Clay comes back? How do you see that fit going?
Yeah, legitimate questions. Style-wise, I saw D'Angelo adjust. He was a high-volume shooter, and I think that's his natural instinct. But what I saw this past year was development in his playmaking skills and making guys around him better and being unselfish. And guys, to be honest, there were times where Kenny Atkinson was not thrilled with him, really more towards the early part to mid part of the season. And there were times where he sat in the fourth quarter. He sat during key stretches, not as much second half of the year. I think there was a more of an understanding of what coaching staff was looking from him, and he adjusted to that. But there wasn't extended sulking. There was never a sense on the bench that he was not excited for his teammates. Part of the whole success that the Nets had last year was based on the chemistry and based on the cohesiveness and the bench backing the starters and the starters backing the bench. And it was this symbiotic relationship that formed. So on the court, there were times where he played a lot with Spencer Dinwiddie, and we would question, okay, how's this going to work? And it did. They found something. There was a spark there. Everything you just mentioned, that's a legitimate concern. I have to give D'Angelo credit in watching him evolve as a player from the first year that I saw him in Brooklyn to year two, that he became more of a problem solver.
How much of that is just simple maturity, given some of the things that were knocks on him with the Lakers and coming over? And I mean, he's obviously going to be in a high-level environment with the Warriors based on what they've accomplished the last few years, but a different one. How much has just the maturity level changed in him from the 1 year to the next?
Yeah, I think he's packed a lot in to 4 years in his NBA career, what he went through in L.A., and a lot of that was based on his own doing. It wasn't necessarily just outside forces. It was his own stuff that he had to get through. And what happened with Nick Young, which he's reminded of occasionally, depending upon the arena that he's playing in, he handled it all really well. And I thought what I anticipated was someone that would maybe shy away from it, but that wasn't the case. He realized what had been done and the damage in L.A., and he put his mind to correcting it and fixing it. And again, look, this all happened during a contract year, so the timing could not have been any better. The fact of the matter is he ends his Nets tenure on good terms, understanding what the ultimate goal was for Brooklyn, and that was to change the way that everybody sees them. And clearly, and I can tell you this, having been associated with the team for 25 years, I've never gotten this many phone calls about the Nets. It was pretty insane after free agent signing day. The reaction around the league, the reaction here locally, where the Nets have been a second-class citizen, and it continues week in and week out. I'm still getting inquiries to talk about this team, and that says a lot, and it says a lot about what D'Angelo did in that process and helping to make that happen.
Ian Eagle here on 95.7 The Game, courtesy of the Dial Pack guest line. Ian, let me ask you this, because it seemed like from afar, Nets fans really love D'Angelo Russell and what he brought to the table. And obviously you guys make the playoffs last year. You lose to Philadelphia, but it was a very, very entertaining series. What was the reception when D'Angelo Russell, when it was apparent, when it was basically told to the world that he was going to have to move on and you guys were going to go in the direction of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant? I get it. Those are two dynamic players. But Kyrie has had his issues. We saw it in Boston. And Kevin Durant, obviously, he's probably not going to play this year after rupturing his Achilles tendon. I just want to know what the reaction was to when D'Angelo Russell was told he basically had to move on. How did Nets fans respond to that?
Yeah, I would say it happened really in two stages. The first stage was when the speculation was out there. And the initial reaction was, hey, we don't want to lose D'Angelo. That was the fans' reaction. I saw that on a large scale. And then when it became a little more apparent that this could actually happen, that it wasn't just a pipe dream, that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving could end up in Brooklyn, and DeAndre Jordan and the other moves that were made collectively, things shifted a bit. I think there was this understanding for the most part, and not completely. There's always going to be some people that feel a kinship with the player that got them there. But for the most part, what I saw was a shift from the fans to say, okay, there was a method here. This was the plan all along. Don't lose sight of the plan. Even though there were some really fun moments along the way, you can't lose sight of the big picture. So what I've noticed since the deal actually happened is not just an acceptance, but an excitement level now that this franchise has arrived and it's relevant. And they actually are in the conversation, no longer just on the outside. That's a big step, not just in NBA circles, but just professional sports circles, and certainly in the New York sporting landscape. To actually be a topic of conversation is not something that this organization has really been used to in previous years.
Kevin Durant is a unique guy. He really is. We got a 3-year glimpse of him. And all last season when we were talking about, is he going to go or is he going to stay? Might he go to the Knicks? The conventional wisdom out here is he's not going to New York. New York's going to eat him up. And I'm wondering if you could shed some light on kind of what that means, if there's some veracity to it, and then what would he have to do to not have New York eat him up?
Yeah, the first part of it, I'm a native New Yorker, born and raised, and I understand the whole saying about New York sports, New York media. The reality is it's no different than any other place. If you win, that takes care of a lot of issues. When there are high expectations, when there are headlines being generated day in and day out, of course, there can be hurdles along the way. But that would be the case in Oklahoma City, which Kevin learned, by the way.
True.
Or in the Bay Area, which Kevin learned, by the way. I don't think there's anything that's going to happen in New York that's going to be that far removed from what he's already experienced. So I think it's a tidy little narrative that many people can jump on, but I'm not sure it's germane to what's happening with Kevin Durant. Kevin has had a roller coaster ride, and I think maybe he's learned some things along the way. This is going to be a unique year just based on the fact that he's not available. but he's going to be around the team, and he's going to have a presence around the team. And they built the team with him in mind. There were moves made prior to free agency that absolutely played into the idea that they want to do everything in their power to make Kevin Durant happy. And that's not to say that didn't happen with Golden State or it didn't happen with Oklahoma City. I'm just talking about the here and now. The here and now for Kevin will be to get himself better and to get to a point where he can contribute on the court. They certainly hope and believe that he can contribute off the court with his presence, especially with the young players that they're building with.
Ian Eagle, everybody, here on 95.7 The Game. You'll hear him this football season on CBS. We can't wait for that. And, of course, he's a play-by-play voice of the Brooklyn Nets on the YES Network. Ian, thank you so much for the time today. We really, really appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Great talking to you. Enjoy the summer.
Yep, you too. Ian Eagle here on 95.7 The Game. Courtesy of the Dialpad guest line, Dialpad helps you make smarter calls. Connect your team with a business communication platform that powers voice, video, messages, and meetings across your existing devices. We'll react to what Ian had to say about D'Angelo Russell and Kevin Durant coming up next, plus Joe Girardi at the top of the hour at 12 o'clock right here on 95.7 The Game. It's John Dickinson, Matt Steinmetz, Bonte Hill on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Well, we usually say there's an elephant in the room, but since Guru's not here, we got to use his put the rat on the table.
Put the rat on the table, please.
And JD brought it up. One of the things we're forgetting with the 49ers, when we talk about Garoppolo and Lynch and Shanahan,
and
is ownership.
And it goes to, I'll just say this real quick, it just goes to, do the 49ers, should they have the benefit of the doubt as to whether or not they'll be successful or not coming into 2019?
Right. And, you know, under the Yorks, 5 playoff appearances in 20 years, 2 under Mariucci, who was a residual holdover from before that era. And I was just looking at their thing, and I was thinking, man, I mean, was the Jim Harbaugh era essentially the 49ers we believe? Because outside of that, they don't have much.
No, they don't.
Very, very little to show from this ownership group, except 5 playoff appearances in 20 years, and I guess in fairness, a new stadium.
Yeah, a new stadium that's, as JD mentioned, you may get heat stroke on one side of the stadium. It's so hot over there. I haven't seen a sellout yet. Actually, the only sellout I've seen at Levi's Stadium was the Beyonce Jay-Z concert and a college football national championship.
I think Taylor Swift sold it out.
Swift sold it out. WrestleMania sold it out.
Yeah, and in fairness, though, I do think you have to give the benefit of the doubt to tickets sold in that case. I mean, they're raking in the cash. Like, and I know, like, we do this a lot with the Giants. It's like, whoa, boy, the Giants, the crowds look awful. Well, you know what? They're still averaging, what, 32,000 fans?
Right.
Which is, you know, it's not what it used to be, but on the grand scheme of things in Major League Baseball, it's still pretty good. And they're still collecting the money, even if people aren't using the tickets. So you do get credit for the fact that all the tickets are sold.
And this is a big weekend for you, Bonte, in terms of your integrity.
Why do you say that?
Because you said there is a buzz around the San Francisco Giants team. So we better see monster attendance numbers.
Well, I'll be out there tonight.
Monster.
I'll be out
tomorrow,
there tonight.
Believe it or not.
I might go 2 straight games. Go to 2 straight Giants games. Sal Castaneda is going to be out. He hit me on Twitter. Said he's going to be walking around. A lot of people are going to be walking around Oracle Park today, because I think there is a buzz right now. I think some, like we were just talking about the Niners or Niner fans and people around here being thirsty for the Niners to have success. I think we're thirsty for wins, especially after the Warriors lost the finals. There's so many question marks with them. You don't know what they're going to look like next season. And then the Giants all of a sudden get hot and people are like, oh, wins again. This is cool because we thought it was going to be a long summer. We thought it was going to be a long summer at the Giants. Still might be.
Still
might be. 25-15 since June 1st. But talking about the Niners and what they've done under the Yorks. And I remember when they fired Mooch. They fired Mooch. They lose to Tampa Bay, who ended up winning a Super Bowl in the second round. And they fired him. And I remember there was a lot of pressure. You know, T.O. was barking. But I always believe, man, they're a number two receiver and another corner away from really being a Super Bowl contender. They were really good. They won 12 games. They were really good. And you fired Mooch, and the Yorks gave total control. First, they hired Dennis Erickson, which was a huge mistake. But then they gave Mike Nolan full control. Not only a head coaching job when he was just a coordinator, but they gave him a GM job.
Let's not forget Terry Donahue was in there, too.
Terry Donahue, the GM, was, man, he hired Erickson.
The guy I thought that was kind of an imposter was Mike Nolan. Just never thought he was a head coach, ever.
Never.
And you look at, you go from Seifert to Mariucci to Erickson to Nolan to Singletary to Tom Sula. That's a downgrade. That's a downgrade. But, you know, there was a lot of, I guess what I'm saying is when the Warriors went 12 straight years without making the playoffs, then they made it, then they missed it five straight years. A common refrain was the Warriors are never going to win with Chris Cohan as the owner.
Mm.
I don't hear as much as that with the 49ers, even though the York's track record is not very good at all. I mean, I guess they can say, well, we got to the Super Bowl, but that's to me an issue too, is their front office hasn't shown their big boys.
You know what? That noise has died down, but when Harbaugh was shown the door, that noise was loud.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted Jed York. Everybody, get him out of here. Matter of fact, I think Lowell Cole, the great Lowell Cole from the Santa Rosa Press Democrat, actually asked Jed York. Maybe you were there, JD, I believe, when he said, who's going to hold the owner accountable? What did he say? Are you going to sell the team? Did he flat out just say, are you going to fire yourself or something like that? I mean, the heat was on Jed York. The Lynch and Shanahan hire seemed like they were slammed. Well, the Shanahan hire seemed like a slam dunk, and I think people have backed off of that. But they've gone to Levi Stadium. They haven't had a winning record yet. Haven't had a winning home record yet. And you look at the 20 years under York, under the Yorks, it's not good.
Well, I will say this. I do think there's a similarity between the Warriors heading into next year and the Niners heading into this year. And that is, the Warriors are going to be interesting. We don't really know what to expect out of next year's Warriors. Of course, they have Curry and the guys, but who knows where they're going to finish. The 49ers are in the same spot. To me, I really like the way I look at it is it's 50-50 whether they're going to have a good year or not. And why do I say 50-50? Because I'm completely unsure. And that's why when people say, oh, this team might win only six games, or this team might get to the playoffs at 11, I think the reality is they could fall anywhere in there. I don't know what the ceiling and the basement is for this team. So who knows? Maybe they go 11-5. I mean, look at a couple years ago when the Raiders went 13-3. Were they a 13-3 team?
No. But
they got every break in the book that year.
Yes, they
did. Every break in the book.
Won a bunch of close games, had little things work out their way, worked out for them. I think the range for the Niners is between 6-10 and 10-6.
That's
a wide range.
It is a wide range, but you can be optimistic with that range, is what I'm saying.
If they're 6-10, you think that creates optimism about the team moving forward? If they go 6-10, JD's saying,
if they're 6-10, Shanahan and Lynch are on the hot seat.
If they're 6-10,
and Garoppolo for that matter.
I think if they're 6-10, those three guys that you just mentioned, Garoppolo, Lynch, or Shanahan, if they go 6-10, one of those guys are out. One of those guys are not coming back next season, in my opinion.
I'm trying to think of a scenario in which 6-10 would be okay. And the only thing I can think
of, Garoppolo gets hurt again.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. They're 6-3. Garoppolo gets hurt. And then the next thing you know, they lose the rest of their games or get only one win. Well, that's a bye-bye Jimmy G then.
Yeah. But even then, exactly. Even then, the questions that are there coming into this season about Garoppolo's durability, ability to play a full season or even play 12, 13 games, that comes so much into question that you'd have to take a hard look toward moving on from Jimmy Garoppolo just based on the fact that he can't be available to you.
Let's go out to Oakland and talk to Leroy. He wants to chime in on Jimmy Garoppolo here on 95.7 The Game. What's happening, Leroy?
Hey, what's up, Bonten? JD, Steiny, always a pleasure to be on.
Hey, look, you guys know I'm a big 49ers fan.
Sure.
I think the 49ers, they do get the benefit of the doubt. It's frustrating. I mean, I was on record as saying I didn't want to pay Jimmy G, you know, all of that money. And, you know, I was supposed to see what he was going to do, and he got hurt. And so now I'm just in wait and see mode. And again, it's frustrating. I mean, you know, I was told that, you know, Jimmy G was this smart quarterback, and then he goes out and he makes a boneheaded play and he gets hurt. You know, I was told that, you know, his passes, you know, they sink and die when he's thrown to the sideline. I mean, I was told that, you know, he left judgment and he makes.
Yeah, we're losing you a little bit, Leroy. See, when Garoppolo first played those four or five games 2 years ago, the one thing I noticed, he puts the ball right there, man.
Does.
He puts the ball right in
the bread basket.
The bread basket. I was going to say bread basket, but then I thought I might be dating myself. He's got great accuracy. Yeah. He really does. When he's obviously got time and not right under pressure.
No, he throws a good ball. There's no doubt about it. That Jaguars game we were at a couple years ago, the Titans game when he had the game-winning drive and he threw for over 340 yards. No, he puts the ball right on the money. Heck, some throws last season against Minnesota where George Kittle dropped the one in the seam. It was he can throw a good deep ball, a good intermediate ball. He can throw the football. There's no doubt.
See, I think that it's great when you don't know what kind of season a team's going to have. We've all known what kind of season the Warriors are going to have the last 3 or 4 years. We don't know next year. That to me is fun because that's where the stories come out. That's where certain players emerge. Other players don't get it done. And the 49ers and to a lesser extent the Raiders are kind of that's. I mean, we may, for example, a month from now we may have two baseball teams in the playoff race. Well, we didn't think that was going to happen.
Right.
In fact, we kind of thought we knew what the Giants were going to be. But what I'm getting at is it's just fun when nobody knows. Nobody really knows. Nobody's going to make a hard bet on this team to make the playoffs, not make the playoffs. I mean, I'm not saying nobody makes bets about it, but it's 50, you're rolling the dice.
Yeah, and are you going to get, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo that's 6-2 as a 49er starter, or are you going to get the guy that can't stay on the field? And can all of the good fortune and the big plays at big moments of the end of the 2017 season, can that translate to close to a full season, which would put the 49ers in the hunt in 2019?
Real quick on the Chilton Autobody text line from the 925, this is interesting. The difference between York and Cohen is the 49ers can and do sell their past. They sell their past. They sell the five Super Bowl rings. They sell.
The Warriors can do that now.
The Warriors can do that now. They couldn't do that with Cohen. You couldn't do that with Cohen. Let's squeeze in Jonathan real quick before we get to Joe Girardi. Jonathan in San Francisco, what's up, man? You're on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, fellas. I just want, you know, I know Garoppolo's not a Steve Young, or he probably not even a Garcia, but if he could be a, what's his name, Alex Smith? They could do some damage because this Shanahan offense with the running backs that they have. Look, last year he didn't have no running backs, and they got one guy, like fourth stringer, who was able to average 5 yards a carry. And now you got all these weapons. And if they could get their defense to play mediocre or above average, I think they could really do some, you know, some damage. But, you know, my expectation is maybe, you know, 800. Let's get to 800, and then we'll talk playoffs next year.
All right, thanks for the phone call, Jonathan. You are.
I think you meant 8-8.
8-8, maybe. The over under is 8-8. I mean, the over under is 8.
Because 800 would be what, 13-3,
13,
something like that.
15-1 or 14-2. I don't know. You're listening to 95.7 KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco Radio.com Sports Station. On the dial pad guest line is Radio.com Sports Insider Joe Girardi. Of course, he is one of 20 managers in the history of the game to win a World Series as both a player and a manager. Joe, it's so good to have you on these airways at 95.7 The Game. Matt Steinmetz, John Dickinson, Bonte Hill. And let's just start off with the Giants right now, who are red hot. A lot of people believe it's fool's gold. What is your opinion right now of the San Francisco Giants going into the trading deadline in 2 weeks?
I'm a little bit concerned because when you look at their offense in the National League the first 3 months, April they were 13th, May they were 14th, and June they were 13th. Now all of a sudden they're first in the month of July. They went 11-2, and I don't know how sustainable it is. Now, these guys have been good hitters in the past, and maybe they had just a rough 3 months, and maybe it is. If it is, I think they're for real. Evan Longoria's had a great July, but he's out. He's on the IL, and hopefully they get him back. But when you look at their best hitter, you could argue that their best hitter this year has been Pablo Sandoval. So I'm not so sure. You know, you have two guys at the top of the rotation, Madison and Jeff, that are pitching pretty well. But after that, it's questionable. But here's the thing. This team is used to winning. They have a manager that's used to winning. He's done a very good job managing that bullpen. Maybe they can get on a hot run for 3 months and make a difference. The other interesting thing is they played the Dodgers better than anybody this year. So maybe they can do it.
Joe, obviously this is Bruce Bochy's last year. I think the Giants probably figure they're in a better spot now than they thought they'd be. If you're an organization, do you take into account that it's Bochy's last year and maybe you want to give him a shot at it rather than sell off some pieces for the future?
Yeah, I mean, I think Farhan is in a very difficult situation because you think of what Bruce has meant to this organization. You think about what Madison has meant to this organization, what Buster Posey has meant to this organization. What do you do? Because I think they're in a very, very gray area. I'm sure they would have much rather had it. They were really good or they were really bad, so it'd be easy, and you could sell, you know, that to the fan base. The fan base has been incredible out there. So I don't envy Farhan one bit because I think he's in a real tough situation. And I think the best thing that could happen in the next 10 or 12 days is that it becomes clear who you really are. Are you the team that didn't hit the first 3 months, or are you this team that's going to hit the rest of the way through? And if you are, then maybe you do make a run.
Joe, how much would you be worried if you were managing this team about taking a Madison Bumgarner away, taking a Will Smith away, and having that adversely affect the clubhouse when the team has been playing so well and you've still got 2 months to go in a season? Is that something you'd be worried about? Would you be bringing guys in? How would you kind of manage that knowing what could happen here in the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing, you know, I was a part of the Aroldis Chapman and the Andrew Miller, and, you know, we were in that discussion. Are we good enough to add a piece or two to win a World Series? And we were like, no, we're not. So they decided to move those two pieces, and we were able to bring Aroldis Chapman back, and they were able to improve their minor league organization, who eventually become really good players, like a Gleyber Torres. And they made the trade with the Indians. And they got some pretty good players and flipped one of them for James Paxton. And they still have Clint Frazier that has been really good for them this year, but is in the minor leagues right now. So I think the way you sell it is, look, guys, I don't think we're good enough to win the World Series. If you guys can go out, you know, but this is going to make us a lot better next year and the year after and the year after. And we're going to have a chance to win the World Series. And that's what it's really all about. It's not just getting into the playoffs. I don't think San Francisco fans are. That's not what they look at. I don't think that's what that organization looks at. I think they look at championships, and that's what it's really all about, and that's how you're selling it.
Radio.com Sports Insider Joe Girardi here on 95.7 The Game with Matt Steinmetz, John Dickinson, and Bonte Hill. Joe, looking at Madison Bumgarner, I'm glad you brought that up with Chapman and Andrew Miller and the type of package the Yankees received for those players. What type of haul could you get for a Madison Bumgarner in today's game, where it seems like every organization is putting more emphasis on relievers and the bullpen and getting ready for October with bullpen arms?
Well, I think you could get two pretty impactful pieces. And depending on who you trade with, some of them might be major league ready. Some of them might be really close. You know, I look at the teams that are maybe in line for another bullpen piece.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.